Blog Talk Radio.
Only one thing hockey fans should be listening to. This podcast. You are listening to the Isles Beat Podcast with your host, BD Galoff and John Jordan. Prepare for your mind to be blown.
Howdy, y'all. It's BD, and you are listening to Isles Beat as we do a playoff primer. Somehow we got there. After all the craziness of this season. And I believe, John, you're back on.
I believe so, too. How are you?
I am well.
We got here somehow, some way. The Islanders did. You and I made it through a whole regular season, come hell or high water. And now we're here to figure out just how the Islanders navigate through the first round and hopefully beyond. We'll have thoughts on that. We'll have thoughts on our recent exploration of Barclays, I'm sure, at some point. Do you miss me, by the way? It's been a whole week.
We went almost a decade
without sharing a man hug, and then, you know, now it's only been a week. I don't know.
Will you make it?
I mean, I'll be okay. Your sweet voice keeps me going. it's been a whirlwind couple of weeks. It's been a whirlwind of a season in a way, but we're here, and it seems like just yesterday, as I got annexed to the bedroom tonight while my wife takes care of some business in the office, and it seems like yesterday that I was actually sitting in this very room, going through one of our first shows, talking about which players we wanted to chuck and which ones we wanted to keep, and we don't have much of a say in the matter, and by and large, it's pretty much the same roster as it was then and pretty much the same result as it was last year for the most part. So, I guess we'll see where this takes us.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you can, and it's cited, you know, I know that George Pais has brought it up, and it was great hanging out with George over at Barclays when we were there, took the time to kind of meet up with us and show me around the place. We talk about, you know, the rebuild for the Islanders started in 2008 at the draft after a failed year of vets and Ted Nolan only wanting to deal with the vets. And basically Garth Snow was able to convince Charles Wong and show him that there was nothing left in the Millbury created system, that there was nothing to depend on, no people coming up, that the cupboards were bare. And I know that we look at other rebuilds and notice that there's been a shorter time. A lot of those rebuilds had pieces already in there. Look at Chicago. Chicago already had Duncan Keith and Brent Seabrook before they started their rebuild in earnest and were able to get Toews and Kane. So, you know, it takes everything. Every situation is different, but the Islanders were put in a very poor spot, and the entire scouting and the way they go about drafts had to be rebuilt. And I think that gets forgotten. And we've now reached a point in the seventh year last year, 102 points. And this year, despite some player regression, some player performance issues, and not a very good year for JT, despite all that, 100 points. And in fact, they're 10th in the NHL. Yes, the East was really tight. And yet they're there. So that does say something. Now, well, can they get past Florida? Well, we'll talk about that.
I can tell you that my first reaction is that they should and they will. But I can also tell you in all honesty that that comes from years and years and years of living down here and never fully respecting the collective opinion of the Florida hockey fan. More than any other fact that may be out there, I'd take some heat for that locally, but that's okay because locally I don't think anybody listens to me anyway. So, but you know, it's interesting, and I know that, you know, we're going to break this down in several different ways and in a new way that we haven't before really on the show, at least not with not anywhere other than through your internal wisdom and me being stupid on the other end. But yeah, it's I think one of the things that I wanted to kind of focus on was, you know, the late season, for lack of a better term, thank God that we're successful by not moving up to third in the division and finding themselves with a much more favorable matchup, not just here for this first round, but effectively the Islanders have gotten themselves on what I consider to be the right side of the Eastern Conference bracket. A better path possibly to have a chance to play down the road for the Eastern Conference title if a few things break their way. But I'm getting ahead of myself, as I want to do, and you're going to be the one that reels me back in and says, wait, not so fast. They've got a tough matchup here, tougher than a lot of people want to recognize.
Yeah, well, they dodged a big bullet. I don't care what anybody says. The Penguins have been the hottest team in the second half of the season. One of those goalies will be playing, so despite the whatever injuries are going on, and the Rangers have their hands full, and you know, the fact that the Islanders dodge the bullet and send that bullet over to the Rangers is fantastic. Pittsburgh is a very strong offense, and the Islanders' biggest weakness right now is their goaltending position. And the fact that their offense cannot match, that is a terrible, terrible matchup with the Penguins. And luckily, in keeping players healthy and basically, you know, doing just enough to, you know, rest and basically tank that one game and letting the kids play, were capable of winning. I think they just let them play. They dodge that and they go against Florida. Is Florida a more favorable matchup? I think so. Is it a cakewalk for the Islanders? Far from it. And the issue is, once again, and I hope that people have realized now, I remember having a lot of arguments over this over Twitter, is the fact that Thomas Greiss is not a full-time number one goaltender. And in his, Halak's stead of being injured since March 8th, the numbers have come a little bit back down to earth. The difference is substantial. It's substantial in high-danger shots, medium-danger shots, and low-danger shots. It's across the board. It's not an aberration. He's not. The more he's used, the more he falls down to earth. Is he above average? I think so. I think that he showed that in key games down the stretch. But that said, he's, you know, not Halak. And we saw pretty good playoff poise from Halak last year. And Greiss has really never been in that spot. So he's a huge question mark. And that versus Florida and the question of which Islanders do you get, the Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, makes it a little bit screwy to try to predict this. But this is why most have predicted that Florida will take this. At first today, I kind of bent in that direction, and then I came back a little bit. And we'll kind of go through all the permutations, and we'll have Broadway Jay come in about 5-10 minutes to talk about that a little bit more in depth analytically. But, you know, the Islanders have not an easy matchup. And I think one of the key areas they're going to have trouble with is Roberto Luongo, which some fans seem to be dismissing. And I think it's a mistake. This might be one of those last rides. He's 37 years old. And he's been there. He's been there a lot. And, you know, an experienced goaltender with poise and the Islanders not with their number one. That's the great difficulty that I have with this matchup.
Yeah, not only not with their number one, but as good as Thomas Greiss has played at times this year and as savvy a find as that was for Garth Snow, which, you know, really served its purpose for certain spots of the season. The fact of the matter is the Islanders are going into the playoffs here with a guy who's played exactly one game of postseason hockey in the NHL, man in their nets, against a guy like Luongo who has lengthy experience and, yeah, surely is itching for a chance to make a deep run. There's no doubt about it that that is the key to this series as far as I'm concerned. You know, the old adage is get a hot goaltender and there's no telling what you can do. I think it's a little bit more than that as the Islanders get moving here as this series progresses. You know, there's a lot that depends on John Tavares's play and obviously the second tier offensive contributors and stuff like that. But I think if you want to look at one factor, I think you've nailed it. I think it's the goaltending. I think it sticks out like a sore thumb. And that's not to say that, you know, the Islanders can't defy logic here and Greiss can't get hot and play well and have the defense play well in front of them and have some positive results. But I think if you're handicapping this thing up front, I mean, that's your main focus, right? That's and forget, take the names out of it. You've got one guy with a game of postseason NHL experience and another with quite a bit more who's, you know, raring to go, looking for a shot to go on a postseason run here in the twilight of his career.
Yeah, you know, and when you talk to hockey people about the playoffs, they say the better goaltender is what takes these series. And that's the biggest issue right now. You know, Luongo, you know, forced a trade out of Florida because of Mike Keenan, wanted to get away from him, went to Vancouver, did his time, had built a house in Florida, kept it. I believe he stayed in an apartment in Vancouver all that time and then basically forced a trade back to Florida. And this is where he wants to be for the twilight of his career. And, you know, here they are rebuilt and retooled. Do they have weaknesses? They certainly do. But, you know, like I said, goaltending is what really takes teams. The better goaltender is usually the difference. And yes, Greiss can get hot. We haven't really seen it, maybe a game or two since March 8th. And that, you know, we're not seeing the Greiss that stole games in the beginning of the season. And if he can raise his level, that's the biggest question mark. If he can raise his level and capture that, especially if Halak is possibly ready for round two, then, you know, you can start to move him back in a bit and go with whoever's hot. It is possible, but is it probable? Well, that's what we're talking about, and that's where why the predictions haven't really gone to the Islanders, you know, gone their way. As if you've been following me with Hamonic, I've pretty much stated that he would be back for the playoffs. I know they're making a big deal of how he's working to be available for game one. I expect him there for game one. If not, then he'll be there for game two. But he will be a part of this series. The concern really is the goaltending. And you know, when the game is tight and you need the offense to pick it up, if Luongo is what we think he's going to be, it's going to be difficult to score. And that is probably the most concerning thing because that's when losing Anders Lee hurts, having that guy trying to mix it up and get those dirty goals. And that, you know, once again, has me a little bit concerned as well, but not as much as the goaltending situation. So I see that Broadway Jay has joined us, and should we move over to have him in?
Are you waiting for my clearance there? Come on.
I'm waiting for your clearance, John.
You're all clear.
All right.
Feels so powerful.
Howdy, Jay.
Can you hear me now?
Yep. Yeah, we had you on mute until we cleared you.
I'm sure you're not the only one to ever have me on mute. It's probably very popular.
I heard you guys talking about Andrews Lee. Fords has you on mute.
I just found out last night. I'm not surprised. We knew this day would come. I guess we'll just soldier on. I'll have to survive without them. I heard you guys talking about Andrews Lee before as I just want to jump right into it. I'm sorry. I get so excited, you know.
Oh, please.
Like, I think that one thing people don't realize about him is he takes tons and tons of shots, which is something that, we really like. He's almost, I think he may be number one on the team in shots for per 60. So, you know, in terms of shot metrics, which are like basically what Corsi and all that is shot metrics, guys who take a lot of shots, that's like a really great thing. So losing Andrews, I think, more significant than people realize. You know, I mean, his big issue is, right, is that he was shooting 6%, you know, so a lot of goals, what would be goals just aren't going in. That's bad luck. That's not being bad, you know, and I hope folks aren't mixing that up. This is a major blow, you know, Andrews Lee, major blow.
Yeah, you know, I've noticed that with, you know, the Strom issue is that he's not taking enough shots. Anders Lee still seems to. I thought that he was under unless he picked it up in the second half, but he wasn't getting as much shots and scoring chances as last year. But Strom was the much heavier difference.
Yeah, well, Strom's also picked it up too in terms of. But he's also had a lot more against, which is bad. I think his problem has more been defensively. And of course, coach trust and those kind of other things, those sort of nebulous factors that are impossible for us to, even opine on. Ryan Strome has definitely had a bad season compared to what we saw last year. But, this is a very good player. Like, people talking about trading him, like, that's dumb. You're dumb if you think that. That's dumb.
That's the thing. We've talked about that several times this season. You know, here's a guy in the very early stages of his career that obviously has a wealth of talent. So anybody jumping to that conclusion just yet, barring some unforeseen blockbuster trade that's going to bring back, you know, a name that I won't even dare, you know, guess on right now. I think you're right. I think that's silly. But before we go super deep into the statistical world and the difference between having Andrews Lee in there and having someone else replace that ice time and fill that role, I mean, I think two names, Ryan Strome, Brock Nelson, are guys that have to fill that void here in the postseason. Do you guys agree?
You want me to go first?
Definitely. Go ahead, Jay.
No doubt about it. These guys are incredibly important players. I mean, I think everyone sort of kind of was hoping they'd take like a step forward, you know, and I'm not sure that Brock Nelson really took much of a step back, but, you know, Ryan Strome, like, it's not been the season. He had a 50-point season last year. That's like all-star elite status in this league, the way things. It's not like the league we had when we were kids, you know, where like all the goalies just stood up. They had all that space. It's not like that anymore. We live in a different world. 50 points is a shit ton of points, and it's replacing that. It's hard to do. That's a big difference, I think, for this team. I mean, forget about, you know, we'll get into the analytics, but I mean, that's a big difference for this team. This team is much different if Ryan Strome has 50 points.
Oh yeah. I mean, that I believe that has been the biggest hit for them. He took a dive at his 100-point mark that they haven't been able to figure out. And I think that is their biggest thing in the offseason to figure out. And I think that the team needs to decide, is it Strome? Is it coaching? Is it a combination of things? I don't know what it is, but at that 100 game mark, it just was an absolute, tumble and has not created any of the scoring chances, not creating the shots, which doesn't create the scoring chances. And obviously his point totals have completely faltered.
Yeah. And that's bad.
Just a bit. The other thing to talk about is that I know that, we talk about maybe a little bit on defensively.
Yeah.
The I haven't felt that Boychuk hasn't really been to the level that he was last year. The Islanders' possession play, the difference between last year, the beginning of the season, and this year, at least it moved upward, but never seemed to really stay. Have you ever looked at the possession at all?
Oh, I may have looked at the possession once or twice. I mean, I basically spend my whole day looking at fucking spreadsheets. I can't get enough of them, you know. I mean, I had a baby this year, so I have, I haven't been able to watch as many games as usual. So, in fact, I have become a person who mostly just looks at spreadsheets. I only watch the other games. Like, I finally became what everyone thought I already was, you know. Now I'm mostly looking at spreadsheets. But, I mean, if we're talking about, you know, I mean, Boychuk has not had a good season in terms of possession. The whole team has been down, everybody. Josh Bailey, you know, I think I've defended a lot, still think is a capable player, has been a very disappointing season possession-wise because he had been in the past a very effective possession player and a possession driver even, the same way Brock Nelson was a massive possession driver. And when we talk about possession drivers, I'm talking about people that, like, when you put guys who are not as good on the ice with them, they become much better, or they get a lot more shooting opportunities. Even shots that don't hit the net, shots that get blocked, all that. Just getting more opportunities to have the puck in the offensive zone. And Ryan Strome was really good at that too last year, and these guys have all kind of taken a step back. Now, that may be a coaching decision. I mean, the team is clearly playing lower event hockey. You know, whether that's a decision that they wanted to have happen or something that sort of has happened by accident, which would be a much worse scenario. I don't know, but what we've ended up with is a team that has had very bad possession. I mean, this team has been, for a team that was, I think, number three, they ended the season last year in league-wide score-adjusted Corsi. You know, they're sitting at 26 to end the season. Thankfully, still ahead of the New York Rangers. We have something to hang our hat on, who are a god-awful team, but for that goaltender. But, this has not been good. They had a stretch, I guess it was just after the new year where they were like basically the second best team in hockey in score adjusted possession. And I guess I started getting excited that might be, you know, who this team really is. But then they just went right back to sinking down. But, you know, listen, they played a ton of games in very little time. I mean, I think it was 17 games and 27 nights or 16 and 27. I mean, that's ridiculous. Who could keep up a pace like that? So I think that there's explanations. And I mean, you know, I'm constantly looking for explanations. That's what I do. I'm a criminal defense attorney. But I think that, you know, they've got one there, at least something that they can hang their hat on. That, hey, the real team is the team that was there at the new year when they were still playing a fresh schedule and not the team that we saw basically hemmed in their own zone for two periods of play every night for 3 weeks.
Jay, let me jump in there. I have a quick question.
Yeah.
There's a term you threw out there, and I've been searching for 2 years as to why, despite a decent amount of success, I can't get excited about this team. I have a hard time for long periods of time feeling confident. I have a hard time being entertained during the games for the most part, and I haven't really ever been able to put my finger on it. At the same time, late to the party in terms of analytics. BD and I early in the season went back and forth. I was talking about, you know, the old school mentality of can a guy perform? Can a guy do this? Can a guy do that? But I think maybe you just hit on something, and tell me if I'm wrong here, but you used the term lower event hockey. Is that a fancy way of explaining why I'm bored all the time?
I don't even know if it's a fancy way. It may just be the right way that you've been looking for. I mean, you know, you look at the team as they were last year, Dallas this year, they were playing high event hockey. So there were a lot of, and when we talk about events, I just mean, you know, what we call Corsi events, which are, you know, shots, missed shots, block shots. So there were lots of recordable events happening on ice. And that high event hockey is, like, I think what we think of as enjoyable hockey. And I'm using air quotes here. You can't see them, of course, we're on the radio, but that high event hockey, it's fun. It's entertaining. And it's what the Islanders were doing last year. This year, their events are down, but events are down league-wide. So it's, you know, it's not just an issue with the Islanders. It's an issue with, you know, the league. Why they're down league-wide, I don't know, you know. But the Islanders are definitely down event-wise. I do believe that it has been a coaching decision, a conscious decision, a reflection of what happened in the Washington series. Probably, in my opinion, a wrong decision to make. But, you know, I'm not someone who thinks I'm 1,000 times smarter than the coach, you know. I mean, you know, if he showed up in my courtroom and started telling me, I mean, listen, I mean, maybe you guys are, but, you know, if he started showing up in my courtroom telling me, you know, what jurors to pick, I'd probably tell him to fuck off. So, you know, even though I can't stand his choices of Brian Strait, like, you know, angrily.
But here's the other side of that. And you're right. Last year to this year is a big, big difference. I still had that feeling at times last year, and maybe that's a little side conversation. But especially with regard to this season. Now, I know Tavares had some health issues in the beginning of the year, and I know, like you know, like you said, the whole team is there was a shift in philosophy, sort of, or approach. But
a
the
shift
fact
in power,
that,
maybe.
And yeah, sure. But also the fact that he's, you know, Tavares finishes the season, albeit not a full season, but with just 70 points, I believe 33 goals. Nothing to shake a stick at, but not the explosive offensive powerhouse. I believe that if this does turn out to be an incorrect approach or the wrong strategy, you're going to look back at this season and who knows, hopefully, you know, some other variables that we're not accounting for right now is the lost opportunity when you have a dynamic offensive player like John Tavares right there specifically just to his game.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, it's sad to see. Like, I mean, all these years of losing, but, you know, I mean, it's right because we've had Johnny for now, what, six seasons or seven? Jesus. So in that time, you know, we really haven't seen this team accomplish much. But, I mean, I always take a long view. You know, I've been watching this team since the Whalers moved. That's, you know, 20 years now, and it has fucking sucked. So it's nice to see two seasons in a row that have been enjoyable as well. I mean, they have given me nothing to enjoy, nothing. It's been awful. So to me, you know, I look at these 200-point seasons in a row, I'm kind of happy. You know, I it's easy for me to take a long view. I know that that can be harder, especially when we're in the moment every day following this team, getting infuriated, Brian Strait falling down, that kind of stuff. But I think if you can take a step back and just look at where we've come from, you know, it's nice. This is a team that could legitimately win a series this year, legitimately. And how long have we been waiting for that? 23 years.
Yeah, and I do think that this team is built for high event hockey. You know,
yeah, I agree.
You look at what has gone down in the shots, creating scoring chances, and tying it to the offense that seems to have disappeared. The fact is, based on and especially the players that are there, that this should have been a higher event team this year. So I do think there is a disconnect between the vision of the team and the reality. And I do think there's going to have to be some thought to how the coaching and how they're going about it. And, you know, I don't know if that's going to mean the coaching change much to some fans' wishes. I really don't know. I mean, it's really hard to say, but I do think philosophically they have to change.
Yeah. Well, I just wonder if we'll see, I mean, we saw something different in the Pittsburgh series, you know, I don't think we saw much different in the Washington series until we started stretching towards the end of the series. I wonder if Jack will do some things differently for the playoffs. I mean, I think that would be probably smart coaching if that's what he did. I mean, I don't know if he will. I'm so excited. I can't wait to see what this team's doing on Thursday.
Yeah, I mean, and I think everybody has a question mark. That's the craziness of the season is the strengths of the season are gone. And without Halak in this first, I think not available in this first series. You're missing the goaltending depth that really kind of offset some of the offensive woes.
Yeah.
So, you know, that said, you know, JT turned it on towards the end of the season. You know, he's streaky. And I definitely agree with you with Josh Bailey. Josh Bailey, who seemed to be, one of those guys that allowed other players to do better. And then this year, it's just been basically an abyss. And then, but yet, last year during the playoffs, what was he, the second leading scorer?
Yeah, he was excellent.
During the Washington series.
He was excellent.
So here's an opportunity to wash the entire season away when it counts the most.
No. Oh, absolutely. I hope he does.
Well, they have to, because somebody's going to step up.
I know, right? Well, I think I think that there's been a lot of talk on Twitter today about. I don't know if you guys already covered this at all, but I was messing with the baby there. But I guess a lot of Ranger fans are pretty worked up that they have to play the Pittsburgh Penguins, and that the Islanders sort of iced that. Missouri Mavericks squad. I don't know if you guys heard about that at all. Did you guys hear anything, maybe read anything on Twitter? People were a little worked up about that, or a lot worked up. And, I think that, first of all, it was absolutely 100% the right decision. I mean, they've played so many games in such a short period of time. So you put in all these guys from Bridgeport, it is 100% the right decision. I mean, the game was essentially not a beneficial for them to win. Because I heard a lot – people talking a lot today about, don't underestimate Florida. Florida's a good team. Yeah, I mean, they're fine. But Pittsburgh is an excellent team, an excellent, excellent, excellent team. Since they fired the previous Mike and got their new Mike, they have become a million times better team. I mean, they are, in terms of score-adjusted Corsi, which is the single most predictive stat of playoff success, they are number two. I guess they're number three because they just got edged out by Anaheim. But over the last, 70 games or something, they're number two. And if you look at their last 35 games, they're coming in at 56%. And to put that into perspective, you just do the math. That means everyone they're playing is 44%. So that means everyone they're playing is Colorado and New Jersey, and Vancouver, and these really bad teams. So this is a team you do not want to face. They are a fucking buzzsaw waiting to happen. And I couldn't be more excited that it's the Rangers that have to face them. Because I hate them. Now, on the other hand,
I love this guy.
On the other hand, we have the Florida Panthers, who are really just—they're just a pretty middling club. I mean, they have a crazy high shooting percentage. I mean, if I told you Jágr is putting in one out of every five shots at 5-on-5, one out of every five shots he takes scores. That is absurdity. That is so high. He can't keep it up. 20% is just too high. And, when you look at this team's score-adjusted Corsi, Florida, they're 49.8. That's less than 50%. Now, unfortunately, the Islanders are even worse. But listen, forget all that, right? Disregard that for a minute. This is not some kind of elite super club, okay? This isn't L.A. who's coming in at, 57%. It's just a middling club. They're just not that great. And Luongo's great, to think what could have been. Oh, tear to my eye, but – forget about all that. This is just not – it's the skaters on the ice that really matter, more so than any goalie, unless a goalie steals a game or two, right? They're all kind of bunched together for the most part. So the thing you got to worry about is the 23 skaters. And Florida's, they just don't do all that much. They really don't. They've been very fortunate. I don't think they'll keep it up. There's a very good chance we win this series, and won't that be glorious?
So here's the thing, and BD, I know you're going to yell at me because you probably have this very elaborate way of getting to this, but I'm excited now. Jay just got me fired up. So if we put all the analytics together, which to me are a bunch of numbers I don't understand because I'm dumb. I do words, and not numbers, and whatever. How does it weigh out, Florida against the Islanders? I mean, what are the numbers telling?
I think it's a coin flip.
I'll take those chances.
You bet you will, because against Pittsburgh, it was a fucking turd shoot for Pittsburgh. So, it's not a thing of, we got to remember, right? We were looking at a choice, We were looking at – the team was looking at a choice. And the choice was either to play this very mediocre team or play this absolute fucking buzzsaw. Why would you ever take the buzzsaw? Especially when you can put the Rangers in front of the buzzsaw. What could ever be better? What
it's
could be
great.
More apropos? So, I just think – and listen, how long have we – remember that time they won that game and then that cost them the pick for – I guess it was Sam Bennett. What the fuck? They do this to us every year, and for once, they did the right thing for us. So,
That's what I was saying this weekend. When it got down to the final two games and what they needed to only get 2 points out of the final two, correct?
Yeah, yep.
And I said to myself, it's Buffalo – it's Philly, and then after Philly didn't need to win that last game, I said, there's no way, because they always do this. And I'm probably exaggerating now, but I feel like I can remember a handful of times where they've won meaningless games and it's cost us in one way or another. I think going into it, I was telling people there's no way. I there's a guy I work with who's a Penguins fan, and I looked at him, I threw my dukes up, pretended like I was going to punch him, and I said, man, this is not what I wanted, but I guess it's you and me. We got to figure out how to catch a game or two together. And then I came back after the weekend, and I said, holy shit. we'll be going down to Sunrise. You guys have fun taking care of the Rangers. So I did not expect that at all, but I'm happy that it happened. Like I said, it's the first successful tank job that I'm very proud of.
Yeah. Well, John, you know, I'm actually, you know, I like to think of myself as like a logical person, not guided by idiotic things like superstition. But I mean, I was right with you. I was like, oh, we're definitely getting Pittsburgh. Like, this is terrible. They're going to do this to me because they always do. I'm so conditioned to this. Like, I'm just like, my body is like, okay, here it comes. Like, I'm watching a game at home and I'm like, here it comes. And I just know it, you know, like I gave away my, I didn't want to go to the game. I'm a season ticket holder. I just gave them away to my cousin. I was like, take these tickets. I don't want to watch this thing, you know, for the Philadelphia Gags. I would have been so mad. Like, it was such a lose-lose. Either they lose and I'm sort of happy, or they win and I'm sort of mad. Right. Like, so I don't know. I just didn't want nothing to do with it. The fact that they did this for me is after all these years of disappointment and sadness. Like, I want to just thank them. You know, I just want to hug Jack or something. I just want to give him a hug. Say, thanks, Jack. Fix his tie for him, you know?
Well, I'd give Jack a hug, and I'd find myself going back into one of my old wrestling moves or something like that too. But I like how you said that you love that they did this for you. I think beyond the shadow of a doubt, we know that they did it for you, specifically for you, because
I feel like it. Yeah,
that fire that you're bringing to the show tonight, I dig it.
Yeah, as a valued second 200 level season ticket holder, they wanted to make sure they took care of me. That's definitely what it is.
You know, the interesting thing is. Yeah, you know, the Pittsburgh is like the worst matchup for the Islanders because it's just the worst fit. The Florida is an interesting fit, but the one thing that I like to bring up is the fact that Jágr in the latter part of his career has not been a very good playoff player. The playoffs in those close games, the physical games, he has a tendency to disappear. Mm-hmm. And you know, I would really like to see, you know, a little Clutterbuck action on Jágr, because if you can shut down Jágr, it gives you more than a coin flip chance, as long as Luongo is not standing on his head.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. I mean, he is – do you know that Jágr's 5-on-5 production was more than John Tavares's? Does
what
that
was
surprise
that?
You? John – Jágr's 5-on-5 production. He had 49 points at 5-on-5. Johnny had 45. So when you we know how important Tavares is to our team. I mean, he's essentially the linchpin. You know, he's the cog that moves the machine. If Tavares was to be hurt, I mean, it would be game over for us, no matter what.
Yeah. Yes.
Jágr has 49 points at 5-on-5. So he's an even more important cog in the wheel for them. And he's old. He's really old. And I think. High event hockey will be a real problem for him at his age. High event hockey will be a problem for me at my age, and I'm like 10 years his junior. So I think for him, it's going to be tough. So if they can bring a high event game, which is the game that they had for us last year, which was made them a very, very good team that lost a very close series with another excellent team, they should definitely beat this team. If they can beat high event, they should beat this team. Isn't that
so
exciting?
It is. It's ridiculously exciting, and I'm going to go crazy and do laps around my neighborhood after this tonight. But that makes me wonder, am I immediately jumping to conclusions and wondering, is it easy enough to flip the switch like that back to the way that they played the game more often than not last season? And could that even be a tactical decision by this brilliant coaching staff that I've never once criticized in the past?
I think
well,
George,
you know, I do listen to you about that. I love this podcast.
Apoplectic fit to that statement.
Maybe, like, right? Why should we? I mean, you know, here's something, like, I talk about, you know, practice law all the time. Like, I always assume that my, you know, the U.S. attorneys and the district attorneys are, like, really smart and doing everything right so I can be well prepared, you know? So I always assume that everyone else is, like, super smart, well prepared, on top of everything. So I like to believe that Jack Capuano is some kind of, like, you know, genius. I mean, he doesn't look the part, I know, but, you know, I do like to believe that, like, he really does know what he's doing. He's been the coach for a long time. And I think that even if maybe he was bad at the beginning, like at this point, with this amount of time on the job, he must be doing something. He must have learned something. And so, you know, if he's able to do that, if he's able to change the way they play to become high event play, the team that he coached last year, that's basically all the same guys. Like, why should we think that isn't possible? You know, why should we live in a world where we don't believe the impossible is possible? I want to live in the world where the impossible is possible.
No, that is not only inspiring, but it also makes me think, you know, I've been critical of this guy in all honesty pretty much since day one when I labeled him as just the next guy at Bridgeport that got moved up because somebody else sucked. But I will say that there have been times, maybe it's been a long winning streak or something like that, or the first thing that comes to mind is the playoff series against the Penguins a few years ago when, you know, as BD and I have said over and over again, we probably didn't have any business being there.
No.
But we gave them a hell of a fight in that series, and it certainly could have gone the other way with a couple of breaks. I remember watching some of the post-game press conferences and watching him talk, and it wasn't anything that he said that was particularly impressive. It was just that the results that we were getting at that time, even in single-game increments, were impressive enough for me to where I said, you know what, maybe I'm wrong here. Maybe this guy really does have it. So maybe, Jay, you're right. Maybe he is the smartest guy in the room, and he's so smart that he wants to not look like the smartest guy in there. Maybe he does it on – maybe that haircut is intentional.
All of that stuff
put together, this is part of the plan.
Listen, Kaiser Soze of coaching. Let's downgrade this.
How about Rollo Tomasi?
Look, he employs what I believe is management's vision. And yes, there's definitely been issues this season. A tale of two teams, there's definitely been issues of player performance. But the playoffs is 0-0. This is where everything gets wiped away. So they can choose and be whatever they want to be. Look at the Tampa game that you and I were at, John, where was a lot of high events. There was a lot of offensive play. They seemed to really take over that game. A little bit of flexing. They did not back into this playoffs. They went into a slump, but they broke out of it with the home games. And a couple of them were very close, but the fact is they did break out of it. So this is a team that can sit and say, all right, everything's even Steven now, you know, and I think really the key is Hamonic's health because I think that their offense completely depends on the defense being able to puck move. And when they're not healthy, they can't really get anything going. And when, you know, Hamonic is back, and especially the you know, Hamonic and Letty and Boychuk being where he really belongs now, I think, with DeHaan, who I think has had a very good season. That seems to be the better setup for them and hopefully can get that offense rolling, because if you want to break down Luongo, you got to generate the shots and you got to create the scoring chances. The thing that they don't do necessarily consistently, yet we saw this season a bunch of runs where they did.
Yeah. Well, I think, and I have to get back to Jack because I think this is still an important point. Like, you know, this possibility of them flipping the switch and just changing their style. They did that for like 15 games right before they got into a nasty stretch of games that were a bunch packed together, the very beginning of the new year in 2016. And they were one of the best teams in the league. They won a ton of games and they had a really high score adjusted Corsi. They were, I think, second. Why not? Why wouldn't they be able to do it again? Like, why are we so, like, a lot of what I once thought about, you know, the predictability of some of these analytics is, Corsi at least, has changed a little bit because it seems like the league, more teams have come to recognize the value of shot metrics. As a result, the teams have gotten a lot bunched along the middle. We don't see as much, with the exception of LA and now, you know, this Pittsburgh run, we don't see as much as we did in the past, the sort of teams really high and everybody spread out. There was a huge bunch up in the middle for a long time. You wonder what the effectiveness of that, I'm sorry, I've had a few scotches here, but if you can capture as much of an advantage from that through the middle, does that make any sense? Like, it's harder to capture an advantage of possession when you're stuck in that sort of 50, 49, 50, 51 space, because everyone is sort of in that, and there's only so much to go around. It's a zero-sum game. So if they can do that, if they can flip the switch and change their style to recapture that, I think it shows a tremendous the fact that they could do it was a tremendous ability to do it again, is what I'm getting at. And like I said, I had a few fingers here of this Lafrey, which is excellent scotch, but I think I got my point across.
Is that you may have just lined up our first sponsor there, so I appreciate that.
Absolutely. Lafrey, the choice for Corsi fanatics.
Well, what was the old one from Seinfeld? We don't want to go with that one. I can't remember it, but oh man, when Kramer does the jingle, I'm gonna look that up. You guys keep talking.
Yeah, I was just thinking Santori time.
Yeah, you know the team is capable. It's really a question of, you know, the player performance. It really depends on the players.
Yeah.
You know, look, Brock had 25 goals, a solid year. I think that his point totals are only different because the rest of the offense didn't follow suit. So you have some capable players, and you have some that didn't have such great seasons. But as you can see on a dime, they can kind of, you know, flip the switch. I think for them, it's a little bit of confidence. There are, you know, people seem to forget this is a very young team. And confidence is an issue. Obviously, it was a Strom issue this season. We've seen it happen with Bailey time and time again, which is why I think a lot of fans have been really wishing to cut the cord. I think he's fine on the third line, but he's been all over the place. And if he's not doing the things that he did last year or the year before, helping the other players on that line, you know, third line is where he really belongs. And the one thing I did notice is Strom picked it up, and then all of a sudden, as soon as Grabowski was out, Strom seemed to fall apart.
Yeah. He's a very good player, Grabowski, you know?
Yeah. No
doubt about it.
It drives me nuts when people just look at his stats, and because as you brought up and what we have talked about before, and you had said the same thing. It's about possession drivers, and he was I called him possession engine. Every time that he was put with Strom, they were effective. So it's about having the right players together. And yeah, Grabowski, and I think Bailey in the past, not this season, were the type of players that allow the other players to kind of tally and get the points.
Yep.
So.
No, I think you're spot on. You know, and Brock Nelson has had, I think he had, his 31 points even strength this year. I think that's more than he had last year. So Nelson is doing well. I think he just doesn't have as many of those power play points. Let me just see. Yeah, he only had 24 points last year even strength. So he's doing great. But I think where you really see a pain is that Josh Bailey had 36 points last year at even strength, and this year he has like 25. I think. Let me just check. Well, I'm here talking about it. 2023. Yeah. So that's a big drop. I mean, that's like a 50% drop. And that has a lot of points to lose at even strength. That's a lot of points. And, you know, Josh Bailey last year was actually a very good player, a very effective player on a very good contract. He's a great defensive player. He was a possession driver and he scored a ton of points. What more could you ask for? This year, he's, you know, taking a big step back. The trouble is with our fan base, right? Like half the fans hated him last year, hated him the year before. Hated him the year before that and hate him this year. So it's hard to convince those people that there was a great Josh Bailey last year and that one's different. They see the same guy. You know, but think, we could have had Nikita Phillips, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, or Luke Shen.
Or Luke Shen, yeah.
You know, the next pronger. So, I mean, that's the craziness of it. And every time that we, you know, cite Josh Bailey, you know, they were able to get the kind of picks to get turn around Hamonic. So there'll always be the expectation and there'll always be the picking apart of, and this is what happens with the eye test all the time, is looking at the mistakes the player makes and not looking at the effect he has over the course of the game.
Yeah.
Creating positive points.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you have to take a long view with basically everything in life, but it starts right here with hockey. You know, you have to understand that, like, just because, you know, one turnover, I mean, it's not a lost boards battle. You know, these lead to the end results that we talk about, like, you know, points and shot metrics, but ultimately those individual plays are a lot less important, than what happened over the grand scheme of a game. And more importantly, the grand scheme of a season, all the things that someone does, whether they help you more than, you know, any kind of replacement player. And I mean, Josh Bailey still helps you more than some kind of replacement player from Bridgeport, but he helped a lot more last year. He was very good last year, and we need that guy back.
Now, well, I think I've said it a couple times this season as well, and I still can't, I should do my homework and come up with these specific examples, or maybe they don't exist, but maybe I'm making it up. But I feel like Josh Bailey has had a handful of really clutch goals, and I feel like at least one of them came in the postseason last year, which I know didn't amount to a hill of beans, or the previous several postseason appearances leading out of the first round. But he's got it in him. I had a conversation when I was still with a guy that I was close with when I was covering the NHL, a former executive in the league, who said to me, you know, there's a lot of people that just aren't going to see Josh Bailey as being the player everybody wanted him to be until he's scoring 20 goals consistently and putting up 50 points. And that might not ever happen.
That's not happening.
no, exactly. But that was the idea in the beginning. And it's, sometimes I've said this a million times, sometimes what a player projects to be doesn't pan out, but that doesn't mean he can't end up being a very serviceable player over the long haul. I think people have a hard time separating those two realities when it comes to, or the perception versus the reality when it comes to Josh Bailey. And I think that sometimes is when a guy is primed for a change in scenery.
Well, the trouble with projections is they're always so sunny. You know, like every year you watch the draft and they have, you know, player after player come up, and their player comparables are like Patrice Bergeron or like Milan Lucic, you know, and no one's ever like Andy Hilbert. You know, you never get that. Like, it's always just some superstar they're comparing every guy in the first round to. But guess what? Four guys are going to be, you know, good players. One's going to be an all-star. Six are never going to touch NHL ice. You know, I mean, this is, you know, they're not all Patrice Bergeron. He's one of the best players in the NHL. You know? So that's the trouble with these kind of projections. And people think like, what did they want Josh Bailey to be? Like, who cares what you wanted Josh Bailey to be? The question is what he is, and is what he is helping us this year? Yes, but not as much as we'd like. Last year, definitely yes, and as much as you could ever ask for. So if we could get back last year's Josh Bailey at $3.3 million, which is an absolute bargain for the production he gave us last year, I mean, that'd be great, right? Isn't that all we ever wanted?
Yeah. I would love to see some draft analysis, honest draft analysis. Maybe this is an angle we can play BD as the draft approaches this summer and say, this guy, for example, he projects – high-end projection is Milan Lucic. Low-end projection is Eric Bolton. And see if
people
Because then you look like a genius. He ends up anywhere in the middle, and you nailed it, right? I mean, that's a great way to look
at it. One thing you find a lot in the draft is when you see those projections and they're like projects to be Wayne Simmonds or Milan Lucic, like more often than not, he's Eric Bolton. You know, that's the thing. Because it's very hard for those guys to end up being, you know, Rick Nash. When they're just big guys that don't score in junior, that's not a good thing at the draft.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. And also you have to remember what their philosophy is at the draft, too. In 2008, when you have a rebuild, the Islanders were getting as many draft picks as they could, trying to get what they felt were guaranteed NHLers. Mm-hmm. That means you need the probability to fall in their way. They're not looking for the home run because they didn't have a top three pick. You know, that people forget that there are no really sure things. Not every draft is as deep as, you know, those special drafts with those special players.
04, generational, 90. Yeah.
Those generational type players. So what they did is accumulate. And, you know, that's what they seem to be very good at. Is being able to pick those type of players that really become, you know, have NHL careers in them. And that is what Bailey is. And whether it's, you know, the fact is, and that as this team gets better and if they can sort out the player performance, Bailey's fine on the third line next year. And, you know, I don't think he's an Islander for life, so I don't think it's such a big issue. But let's switch gears here and talk about John Jordan's favorite player.
Which, Braden Strait?
Yes. Brian Strait.
Oh God.
And I think that's what frustrates a lot of fans, because whether it's eye test or even analytically, though there were some games he actually wasn't so bad. He's kind of a problem in both. And, you know, they seem to really preferred the kids in place of him.
Do you think they do? Do you think the coaching staff prefers the kids in place of him?
No, I don't. I think that the fans do.
I think they're right, though.
It's quite the opposite. I think that the coaching is, and this is where I think there's a disconnect between management, vision, and analytics, and coaching and gut and their, you know, coaches, you know, as much as they might buy into the analytics, they're still going to go with their gut and pick apart. You know, I saw Ryan Pulock blow a coverage and it led to a goal, and I cited on Twitter, I will guarantee you that you will see Brian Strait next game. And lo and behold, that is what happened, because I predicted this is what the coaches were going to pick apart. Then when they ran Pulock, he might make a mistake here and there, but he's also creating offensive opportunities and he was getting some tallies and some points. So it seems to be, you know, a very, you know, a little bit of a very conservative coaching dance as opposed to the analytics. And I really wanted to get a sense from, you know, you and crunching numbers.
Yeah.
How big of a difference is it?
Oh, I mean, it could be more substantial. And Brian Strait's barely an NHL, probably not an NHL player. You know, I mean, just to put it into perspective, I mean, and would you believe that
Brian
Pulock,
he's not real?
I only wish. if would you believe that Ryan Pulock has one less even strength point than Brian Strait in all the games that Brian Strait's played? I mean, think about that. That is an embarrassing fact for Brian Strait. But that is not the extent of how awful he is. And while I say this, I think he's actually having his best season yet in the NHL, which is almost impossible to believe, because he's, like, this year he's clocking a 47% Corsi, which is, of course, you know, negative for the team, which is, it was about just shy of 50.
But not that bad, and negatively.
But not as bad as, you know, he had been in the past, where he was like, you know, 10 percentage points below. I'll take a look at last year real quick. I mean, this is a guy that absolutely has no business being in the NHL. Yeah, he was 7 points below last year, 46.9. So, I mean, this guy really has no business being in the NHL. And I'm not mad at him for it. It's not his fault, you know. He's trying to eke out a living, and good for him. He's making himself, you know, the veteran minimum, I guess, 800,000, right? Good for him. That's wonderful. I'm glad. I hope he finds a nice hobby, maybe moves back to Waltham, you know, eats at nice restaurants, lives his life, but just keep it away from the New York Islanders. It's just what I'd like. You know, maybe like a coaching job opens up at Northfield Mount Hermon or something. That's where he went to high school. So, you know, opportunity like that, I think he shouldn't pass up if it comes to him. So, Brian, if you're listening, maybe send your resume up there. Just see what happens.
Trust me, he's not. I took care of that long ago. if there was ever a chance, we ruined that one. But I think if we keep on about Josh Bailey and Brian Strait in particular, I think I know we've already pissed off our friend George for sure. But I wanted to get back quick to the current series, and before we forget, or before we run out of time, or before my computer dies, all of these things completely possible, by the way. This current series, I know you called it a coin flip, Jay. I think leaning on the side of optimism, because it is the first series that I really believe we have a very good chance to win in a long time. I'm going to go with the Islanders in six, and I'm going to go with that prediction based on a very impressive series from John Tavares, because I think that's the narrative that I want to believe is going to play out. Why don't you other two go through an off-the-cuff prediction for us, if you will?
John, you want to go first?
Yeah, you can go first.
I got Islanders in six, winning at home in the greatest way possible, with a blowout would be fantastic. And also, I have Pittsburgh in four.
That's great. And, does this mean I have to make a prediction? This one's difficult.
You do. I know you hate this.
Well, the difficulty for me is the question mark that Grice presents. I have a very difficult time getting past that. And, you know, but that said, I do think that the Islanders have a couple of things up their sleeves. So I do think the Islanders can do it. It might take them till 7 to get their ass in gear. And it could be, you know, I'm really fearing, because I do think Luongo needs to be broken down, and that requires the offense to do something that they, you know, it's not been in the habit of doing this season. Mm. And, you know, and I really think that if you know, Greiss can be the player that he just needs to be a little bit better than above average. And I think that that's the problem of what he's been since Halak has been out. He's just been just a little bit above average. And in some games he's looked average. But he needs to be more than that in this series. But they're capable. And because they've been there before, because of the bitterness of losing to Washington, and those players that are, you know, JT especially, that because of that, I think that they can work it out. It would be great if they're able to do it in 6. It might take them to 7 because it might take them to really get their legs a little bit longer than we would prefer. So I was in 7.
You gotta say it, man. You gotta come out with it.
You know, I was thinking, you know, I was at all the games for all the home games, you know, for last year, and when I sit back and think about it, as devastating as it was, like, they were so close to winning in 6, like so close to winning in 6. You know, if Johnny doesn't break that stick, you know what I mean? It's a totally different series. So I got a feeling 6 is our lucky number. That's where we're getting it. Islanders and 6. I gotta believe with the capital LI.
Yeah, and see, here's my thing, and I'm perpetually guilty of getting ahead of myself in life. It's one thing that at some point I'm gonna learn. But if they get through this round, I see the.
Oh my God!
Ticket.
Don't even get going. Let's just worry about this first round.
Yeah,
just
one
please.
Step at a time.
Please.
Huh?
Please.
Well,
No.
But that's what I have a hard time with. I mean, I think I even said it last year if they could have gotten past Washington or whatever. But you know, I'll just go with the whole. It's wide open after that, and especially the next potential matchup. I mean, man, I don't think you could have asked for a better scenario. But again, that's cart before horse. However, yeah. as I stare at my bracket on the NHL's bracket challenge page, I noticed that they actually put up a little statistical analysis button, and I have no idea what goes into this because all they show is goals against PK, point percentage, and shot attempts percent behind.
Yeah, everything about – yeah. Go ahead.
They'll show you. It says statistical advantage versus fan consensus. So who's picked who or whatever versus however they determine the statistical advantage. And interestingly enough, to go to another series real quick, they give the again, I don't know what's in the magic formula, but they give the Philadelphia Flyers the statistical advantage over the Washington Capitals, whereas fan consensus is at 90%, predictably so. So I don't know if that means there's no credence to be put into this whatsoever, but found it kind of interesting.
Well, that's
actually
something
very
I can't opine on. Yeah.
The NHL's in-hand stats are not really there. So I wouldn't really go by that. But if you looked at a little earlier tonight, I retweeted Infective Math's take on that. And it actually is much closer between Caps and the Flyers and how they match up.
I can give a little explanation on that if you want. What Micah does there I think it's the last 25 games basically make up the sample, because that in the past has proven to be very predictive. The last 25 games is gorgeous, of course. So Philadelphia has been on a tear, and Washington has basically been cruising since they made the playoffs, you know. So and since I guaranteed home ice like a month ago. So I wonder, you know, I mean, you stick with your model for sure, but you kind of have to wonder if Washington doesn't just turn back into the great team they were before they made the playoffs. So, you know, I can see that. But I will say I wouldn't put a single hair of stock in NHL stats. They're really bad. They're inaccurate. Nobody likes them. They're all dead wrong. I recommend, you know, War on Ice is much better. Hockey Analysis, Stats and Hockey Analysis is also way better. I'm really into Corsica.hockey, Manny Elk's site. That's awesome. Highly recommend that. He's really good. Those are my favorites. I'll leave them there.
Yeah, I use War on Ice quite a bit. The most interesting thing is, the other thing I noticed about the Caps is, you know, they had a lot of puck luck for a while. And the thing that you notice with PDO is if it's over 100 or well over 100, eventually it corrects itself. And I had said it earlier in the as we were kind of getting towards the end of the season, that, you know, Caps were having a lot of puck luck. It's something that the Rangers had and then fell apart. Florida, you know, faltered a little bit and then got themselves together again. Puck luck tends to correct itself, and I just felt that that correction seemed to be happening a little bit for the Caps, where, you know, things weren't going in like it was before and, you know, going a little bit back to normal. So, you know, I think they might be somewhere in between, and we'll find out that can the Caps be taken out. I don't know if they're going to be taken out by the Flyers. I think what's going to happen in this type of series is they're taken to seven games and they're bruised and battered. That's what you want. So, you know, the Flyers might not take out the Caps, but that said, it could be a real, real dogfight, and what's left of the Caps might not get through the rest of it. And that's thing. That's why I wanted to avoid, like, playing, let's say, the Rangers. Islander Rangers is that same type of situation. It doesn't matter, you know, where they were or how they were playing. It becomes its own battle.
Yeah.
And I think that with the Flyers and the Caps has potential to be.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a great point. I think Pittsburgh's actually the best team in the Eastern Conference. I know Washington has some pretty gaudy, you know, win totals, but Pittsburgh is probably a better team. I mean, once they had that coaching change, they just went off, you know, and that's a scary thing for the rest of us. Hopefully, you know, that's a problem for us for, like, I guess a month and a half from now, but if all goes well, right, putting the cart before the horse again. But, you know, I mean, we were talking about PDO here. I think, you know, the Rangers, like, like the Rangers were, you know, as always, like, they always have a high PDO, they have a high save percentage. But, you know, earlier in the season, they had, like, 11% shooting, and they've gotten really bad because they went down to 9% shooting, which is still, you know, like, almost 2% above what you'd expect. So, you know, the Rangers, who have a, you know, 102-4 right now at the end of the season, best in the league, of course, or highest in the league, one might say luckiest even, they could be even worse. They're due to be even worse than they've been, and they have been very bad. So, you know, that's more to look forward to. More to look forward to. I'm hoping that that series is just dreadful for the Rangers and their lovely fans, great folks, all of them. So that's what I'm looking forward to. So almost as good as the Islander series.
And that should be great because both my brothers are Ranger fans, so that should be very entertaining.
Well, nobody's perfect.
Don't you usually refer to them as heathens, BD? Is that not the...
Yes. My heathen miscreant siblings.
Yeah. Miscreant is exactly right.
Yeah, and they don't think they're getting past Pittsburgh either, by the way.
Yeah. Well, they're right about one thing then, huh?
Exactly.
Well, do you want to spend any time bouncing around with some global predictions for these playoffs, or do you want to cover a few other things first?
I don't know. You know, I get them wrong. I'm so bad at that. Last year I took Winnipeg over Chicago, which was like so dumb, right? That was when they played Chicago in the first. I had like Winnipeg going to the Cup, which was so dumb. Like, what was I even thinking? Like, Winnipeg sucks, you know? I'm so bad at those types of things. I didn't even fill out a bracket because I suck so bad. I won't fill out a bracket because if I put the Islanders in, like, I think that they'll then go lose, you know? So, like, I'm taking one for the team by not filling out a bracket. You can all thank me later.
Well, maybe we shouldn't talk about it then. I'm kind of subscribing to your theory now. As I stare at mine right in front of my face, I'm afraid to reveal what
it is. Delete it. It's not too late. my wife wants me to stop chatting with you guys. She just sent me a message, so I better go. But this is awesome. If you guys ever want me back, I'd love to do it. So just let me know.
We will definitely have you back. As we had talked offline, I think that it, and I think the energy and then the what we've needed, you know, I talk to people and have a basic grasp of analytics, but I don't have my head in the spreadsheets. I'm an art guy. That's not my thing. So it's good that we have the same sense of things, but you're able to cite and present it so much better, which is what you were doing so well online and on HF boards. So it kind of drives me crazy that you've been banned there.
My first five infractions, I made these like, or maybe it's four, I don't know. I made these like explanations years ago, right? When people thought Dan Girardi was still good, the good old days, you know, and I had these like statistical explanations of why he was so bad, and they called it trolling. Like what kind of person could think that a top two defenseman on a team as good as the Rangers could be bad? I mean, guess what? I was right. He's bad. Now everybody knows it, you know? So they get worked up at me over there. There's nothing I can do about it. We just move on with life, right?
Exactly. And I know that there's a bunch of HF boards people that have kind of been a little bit frustrated with the new regime. You know, I cut my teeth over in HF boards years ago, and it's a great place, but you know, it lives and dies by the people that run it. I know that a couple of them have put together another site, icehockeytalk.net. So, you know, there's other places out there, folks. So, you know, but anyway, we'll have you on soon. I think John and I want to talk about Barclays just a little bit. And I don't want you in the doghouse so quickly.
It's a little late for that. All right, boys. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks,
I look forward to
really
time,
appreciate
okay?
it, man.
Right, we'll see you guys next week. Take care.
Bye-bye. All righty.
Oh,
so, John.
Funny. I now putz around and by accident stumble upon ESPN, which I don't even know why. But literally, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 out of 9 so-called experts.
They all picked up the Panthers. I was actually reading a good piece over on CBS. Was it Adam Gretz, who put the Islanders not at the bottom? Like, you know, he had the Minnesota Wild. He said that, he put the Islanders towards the back of the predictions because he had it said, and he said that he might eat it because it really depends. It's hard to predict because of the Islanders' injury situation. So I think the issue of injury situation and the fact is that anybody who thought Greiss can do no wrong, the league and perception outside of here is that the Islanders haven't been so good in goaltending since Halak has gone down. And that's why Halak is the number one goaltender. It's because of that, you know, that is a big question mark on Greiss. And it's been a terrific season being a 1B. And I really hope that the Islanders can take out Florida and Halak can work himself in and then just ride the hot goaltender because that could be the difference. But, you know, we'll take that up in a future episode. But I think we should talk about Barclays a little bit before we end.
Yeah, we should. And then before we sign off, I am going to make you make some predictions, dude. I know you hate it, and I got to hold your feet to the fire sometimes. But anyway – yeah, folks, I was up last week, had the pleasure of reuniting with in person with my cohort here, who unfortunately dumped his phone in a cup of water or spilled pissed on it. I don't know what he did, but we had a little snafu getting together beforehand, but we made up for it between periods. And that was a highlight of my pre-business side of my trip. But getting to Barclays, I'll tell you for me, if you don't mind me jumping in there first, it started off great. Okay. I landed, at JFK at about, I don't know, a little bit before five, I think, or four, I don't know, something like that. Took me a while to get checked into my hotel, and got an Uber over to Brooklyn because I thought I was running late and I'm not confident in my train abilities or mass transit of any sort. And I blame Florida for that, especially my current area, because we don't have anything worth a shit, but that's beside the point. Anyway, so I got in a little bit later than I thought I would and didn't hear back from BD because again, he pooped on his phone or something like that. I don't remember, but looking to meet up with some other buddies. And I walked down Fifth there away from the arena and just walked into pretty much the bar I saw. I believe it was called McMahon's. And I marveled at the fact that there was what appeared to be an Islanders bar, manufactured, of course, to a certain extent, seeing as how this is the first year of residency there. But I took some pictures and texted my dad, and I said, how cool is this? A place to hang out pre- and post-game before an Islanders home game. Because as we all know, there wasn't any such thing other than the Marriott, unless you count your car or the area around your car at the Nassau Coliseum. So at that point, I thought things were flying high. Then we head on over, go inside, and I'm getting my a little bit of excitement going on because it's the once or twice a year I ever get up to New York to catch an Islanders home game. Same old thing as usual. But I get inside, and I just feel all basketball-ish. And, walking through security, I look to the left, and I'm seeing through the glass window, like, the Nets practice court and stuff like that. And it's just – I'm starting to get my first feelings of some bizarro world. And then head up to the seats and meet up with the people that I was meeting up with. And I see a lot of, Islanders banners hanging. Obviously, the big logo at center ice. They introduced Mike Bossy at some point in that game. I might be skipping ahead a little bit, but either way, I started thinking to myself, for me personally, it's odd that my dad wasn't there. Usually when I go up, dad goes with me, and he's got a long storied history at the Coliseum, taught me everything I knew about the stuff that I can't remember because I was too young, but that was a little bit odd. And then just kind of staring around, the off-centered scoreboard, the black nature of everything as far as color goes throughout the arena, and intermixed with the traditional Islanders colors. Just the whole event for me throughout the evening was weird, and I should be better at describing it than just using that one very commonly used word, but I couldn't shake it, and I still feel that way looking through some of the pictures that I took that night. It was just a little weird for me.
Well, you are a weird guy.
That's true.
Yeah. Well, look, anybody who's been used to Nassau Coliseum is going to have a big adjustment. I've seen it with different fans in just how they go about and how it's taken time. And I've seen it over the course of the season. Everybody hated that we're longtime Nassau Coliseum people. All of a sudden, as the season goes on, kind of, changing a little bit, loosening up a little bit. Is Barkley's ideal? It's not. And I have, I am not somebody who was a season ticket holder at Nassau Coliseum. I would go at special events and, from time to time. So I wasn't there all the time. It's a different scenario for me. I found Barkley's perfectly acceptable. Does it have some issues? Yes. The problem with Barclays is Barclays. Their handling of the game, the handling of things, for prime example, scheduling. Prime example, the lighting. Prime example, the ice. Prime example, how they work with season ticket holders. Barclays' problem is Barclays. The facility is fine. Is the facility ideal? No. But we all fucking knew that. And if the obstructed view seats are a problem, don't fucking sit in them. It's that simple. I sat in great seats. It was fine. And I liked a couple of the different aspects there. Look, it's not Long Island. It's Brooklyn. It's not our ideal situation. We have to walk past that. You have to work with what's there. I did like that, the keyboardist is it front and center. I like that DP and Shannon Hogan are right there doing their show right as you walk in. I think that, in going to different venues around the NHL over the years, I've seen a lot of some of that in other places, and it's nice to see. It's something to, that they can work with. The food places were the food and not to mention the food places that are across the street from Barclays itself. But the food overall is better. Is it perfect? No. But, and I know that some fans have had some issues with security, but in who I've talked to, and I spoke to a lot of different people there and different fans and get their little takes, I have not heard a bad word about security or how they go about it. And I've noticed it myself that they were very friendly. You see them working during the actual game, something that we didn't see at Nassau, you know, where you would need to find somebody to do anything. You know, is it the perfect venue? It's not. It wasn't built for hockey, but it's the best that they could do. The issue that I see with Barclays is just Barclays. I think everything else is quite frankly acceptable.
So let me just jump in there and go back just a little bit. Yeah, again, my experience was a little bit strange, but that's me being an Islanders fan that gets to make one or two home games a year at most for the entire duration of my life, right? Outside of that, from the experience of a hockey fan, yeah, absolutely fine. The place was nice. The view from where I was sitting was just fine. We basically sat in the similar seats to where we sit when we go to Amalie Arena all the time here in Tampa, which is up higher, but right on the red line, center ice, and it was perfect for me as far as that goes. It was just a little strange. I found myself in Bizarro Land, like I said. I too noticed that the arena workers, security and otherwise, were all very friendly. I took a couple of elevator rides while I was there. There was an employee on all of those, and they didn't just stand there and push a button or say hello. They made, you know, casual conversation, which is not something that I've grown accustomed to over the years. Even the concession workers had a conversational anecdote to throw out there here and there, which is nice. Overall impressions, just from a hockey fan's perspective, not bad at all. I did make a point. I had our friend George point out, and I think you were already aware of this, but exactly where the obstructed views were coming from. And that did make sense to me, having been able to see it in person. It's not a big, you're not sitting behind a big pylon or a big wall. It's just an angular thing. But that's because this place wasn't designed with hockey in mind. Is there a long-term fix there? I don't know. I can't even put a series of numbers together, let alone start to think of things spatially like that. But overall, you're right. It was a pleasant experience. It's just a little weird for me as an Islanders fan. I just wanted to make sure I made that clear.
Well, it is, because it's so, you know, you're going all the way to Brooklyn for an Islander game. You know, it's such a different place and a different atmosphere going in there as opposed to the Coliseum. You know, they're just, you know, and the history to get there is something that I think a lot of fans are not going to be able to absorb for a long time. I think that everybody's going to have to get through that. And it's probably an ongoing process. There seems to be great difficulty in trying to absorb all the different facets, and we might understand it intellectually, but emotionally, or when we, you know, do go to the games, or if you're there night after night, it's difficult. I think a lot of fans are going to go through changes of not being season ticket holders anymore because it's not the same for them. And some might, you know, I saw some, you know, local Brooklyn folks who have become season ticket holders who really enjoy it. There is a change happening within the fan base of how fans that were, you know, NASA Coliseum stalwarts, you know, they're always there, that are going to go through changes and be a little bit more of a, you know, a fair weather fan, somebody who goes to the games on location when it fits the opportunity, but there'll still be fans, but it's going to be a little bit from afar. And that takes big, big adjustment. And I think that we fans are going to be going through a lot of that for a long time. And I think that's not going to quite end. And like I said, the biggest impediment and the biggest issue that I still see is Barclays and the fact that they need to get better. Are we a little bit too sensitive to everything that they do? Maybe a little bit, but as we've cited here, there have been some really ass-worthy, exceptional stupidity moments from them, and you know the fact is that and just the case in point of the ice being an issue when they're trying to be in a world-class facility shows that they have a lot of issues to work out.
Dude,
and they still need to, I think, be in touch with, I think, the Islanders Booster Club and be much more, back and forth communication with them so that they're not constantly caught with their pants down, thinking they're patting themselves on the back and thinking they're doing a great job when they're not. And I think that is the biggest issue, is their learning curve as well. And I think they have a lot of adjustment. And if they don't think so, I think they're up for a rude awakening. So that's going to be an ongoing process too. I get that there's issues, but I thought that the facility was workable, and you better get used to it because they're going to be there for a long time.
You continue to raise the bar each and every week on this show, my friend. And this time I'm going to single you out for using the term ass-worthy.
Thank you.
I think might be a first for me. I thought I knew every connotation of every swear word in the book, but that was fucking awesome.
Discovering new ways of describing Barkley so they're pissed at me. It's going to be great.
Ass-worthy is fantastic. I'm going to use it tomorrow at work. Anyway, you also let me know while we were hanging out together last week that I was, and I quote you, "You're not dressed properly at all." I had a hoodie that us Florida kids wear to the beach sometimes when it gets a little breezy, and that was my Monday night, but thankfully I had enough cocktails in me to keep me warm. The next day, as I was walking about a mile to my conference over in Manhattan with a long-sleeve shirt and a sports coat right up alongside the East River, I was freezing my ass off, and so hopefully you got a preemptive chuckle at me on that one. I was ready to come home real quick. But anyway, we only have a few minutes left here. I want to run through these matchups and put my ass on the line. I've already predicted the Islanders in six against Florida, so we got that out of the way. I'm going back and forth on a few things. Might change some stuff. If I do, I'll post it to Twitter. But I have the Lightning right now prevailing over Detroit in seven games. I don't know why they're really banged up, but I think they're just going to pull it out for some reason because I think Detroit really squeaked in. I think they're all kinds of a mess. I have the Penguins beating the Rangers in six. That's probably at least one too many. I'm giving the Rangers a little bit of credit there because they always seem to do some things that I don't think they're even anywhere near capable of. And I have the Capitals beating the Flyers in five. Over on the other side, I've got Dallas over Minnesota in five. I've got St. Louis over Chicago in seven. I've got Anaheim over Nashville in seven. I've got the Kings over the Sharks in seven. Beyond that, I have Pittsburgh getting past Washington in round two, the Islanders getting past Tampa, and we have a Penguins-Islanders showdown in the conference finals where we probably get our ass handed to us and the Penguins go to the final. I have Dallas getting past St. Louis in the semis in the West, Anaheim getting past L.A., and Anaheim beating Dallas to face the Penguins in the Stanley Cup final where your Anaheim Ducks will take home the cup this season, all subject to change, and I probably will change that tomorrow.
You better, but you might be right on the Anaheim. I don't know if should I be picking how many games because I know who will get passed. But
who cares? Do what you want to do. No format.
Well, Stars versus the Wild. The Stars are going to clean house. Blues versus the Blackhawks. I disagree. I think St. Louis did not make enough changes. I think St. Louis had an opportunity to change some things. I think they have some injury issues, and I think they're still missing a lot of stuff. I think the Blackhawks take them out. I do think the Ducks take out the Predators. I think the Kings take out the Sharks. I do think the Islanders get past the Panthers, and I think that's a tough one. Lightning squeak by the Red Wings in seven. I think that the Capitals versus the Flyers becomes a slugfest. Maybe the Capitals get past them in six, but they will be staggering after that. Penguins take out the Rangers. And, as for the next round, we can talk about that next week. But I do think that the Ducks, I think are, and maybe the Penguins too, and maybe a little bit of Washington versus, we know that LA and the Blackhawks are always in the mix and always dangerous. The question is which team is ready to rise to that elite level, because those are the two elite teams for the last couple of years. I think Anaheim is really close to that, and I do think that the Ducks is really a favorite of mine to go into the finals.
Well, there you have it. I'll let you get into your second round predictions next week, and I'll make sure I keep you accountable for that. That was fun, man. I'm glad we had Jay on. Maybe we can do it again. I'm excited for Thursday. I may find myself down there at some point this weekend. I'm not quite sure yet. We'll see. As the series progresses, we'll see what other plans I might make. But in any event, I'm ready to get out of here. It's been a pleasure, as always. I'm John Jordan. BD, you keep it real, man.
I'm keeping it real. Anyway, and thanks for listening, folks. And we will have Broadway Jay back, because I thought it was really good stuff. And we've talked about having a little bit more of a analytical voice, and we'll have him in for spots. So we will have him come in maybe next week as we kind of take a look at what's happened. And until then, thanks for listening, folks. Go Isles.
See ya.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?